Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa esha adya purushaha. Kalpe kalpe srijatya jaha. Atmani atmanatmana. Sa samyachati paticha. Translation, that supreme original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, expanding his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, the first incarnation, creates this manifested cosmos, but he is unborn. The creation, however, takes place in him, and the material substance and the manifestations are also himself. He maintains them for some time and absorbs them into himself again. This is the third time around in Purusha Sukta confirmed chapter. In the short sentence, what has been explained twice before in detail is now being summarized. This is the relationship between the Lord and his creation. And so we're going to hear basically Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy in the purport, the oneness and simultaneous difference between the creation and the Lord. And since it's inconceivable, it's inconceivable. But it's to some degree knowable, remember from yesterday. Proportionate to one's surrender, proportionate to one's advancement on the spiritual path, proportionate to one's earnest, sincere devotional service, the Lord imparts some understanding of that which is unlimited and inconceivable. So here we go, into the realm of the unlimited and inconceivable. The creation is not different from the Lord, and still he is not the creation. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9:4 as follows. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtinah matstani sarvabhutani natyaham teshu avastita. The impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth is also a form of the Lord called Avyakta Murti. Murti means form. But because his impersonal feature is inexplicable to our limited senses, he is the Avyakta Murti form. And in that inexplicable form of the Lord, the whole creation is resting. Or in other words, the whole creation is the Lord himself. And the creation is also non-different from the Lord, but simultaneously, as the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is aloof from the created manifestation. The impersonalist gives stress to the impersonal form or feature of the Lord, and does not believe in the original personality of the Lord. But the Vaishnavas accept the original form of the Lord, of whom the impersonal form is merely one of the features. A little complicated, right? So we'll go back and unpack all that stuff. The impersonal and personal conceptions of the Lord are existing simultaneously. And This fact is clearly described both in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and also other Vedic scriptures. Inconceivable to human intelligence, the idea must simply be accepted on the authority of the scriptures, and it, that's this oneness and difference simultaneously between the various features of the Lord, it can only be practically realized by progress of devotional service to the Lord. Same thing as that's being said by Brahma in the last several verses. One can realize proportionate to. So it's not an intellectual exercise or mental adjustment. It's a matter of receiving descending knowledge within the heart of one who is surrendered and submissive and engaged in service to the Lord and situated in another kind of intelligence besides material analytical intelligence. Impersonalist depends more or less on inductive logic, that's this empirical, intellectual reasoning process. This, therefore this, therefore this, therefore this, therefore there's no supreme. There's no form. The impersonalists depend more or less on inductive logic, and therefore they always remain in darkness about the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Their conception of Krishna is not clear, although everything is clearly mentioned in all the Vedic scriptures. Then Prabhupada gives a clue, like a key, to understand where they, besides they apply the wrong process to something that can't be accessed by that process, there's a certain conception that they're carrying. A poor fund of knowledge cannot comprehend the existence of an original personal form of the Lord when he is expanding in everything. This imperfectness is due more or less to the material conception that a substance distributed widely in parts can no longer exist in the original form. Prabhupada gives a very simple example. Here's a piece of paper in its whole. Take the piece of paper, rip it into little pieces, and distribute the pieces of paper. There's the little pieces of paper that are from the original piece of paper. Now the original piece of paper in its whole condition no longer exists because it's distributed everywhere. And that's the impersonal conception. Whatever it is that's original that becomes distributed must no longer exist. And so the conception of the personal form of the Lord existing everywhere, personally, that contradicts this, and therefore by the reasoning process, since that contradicts this, this cannot be. Then they go to, but there is something that does exist. That was that one thing that does exist. Brahman exists. And that Brahman is undifferentiated, and therefore go either direction. The material creation, it doesn't exist. The form of the Lord doesn't exist. There's only one thing that exists, and that's Brahman. So, Jagat Mitya, Brahman Satya. And what is Krishna? He's part of Jagat. Therefore, Mitya doesn't exist. We'll give him some credit, rarefied goodness. Not just goodness, like really good goodness. But good, but material. Therefore, Brahman accepts a form. And it's called Krishna. And then there's degenerations of that form, and it's called human existence and Deva existence and... But it's not real. Because there's only one thing that's real, and that's Brahman. This, therefore, Krishna is false. You're false. It means, you know, the embodied condition and any thoughts and anything. There's only one thing, Brahman. All it's real neat and tidy. The absolute truth is Brahman. Everything else is false. Of course, there's different versions, and there's literally unlimited varieties, even in conceptions of Brahman, conceptions of impersonal absolute. There's so many, 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 many different. But this is a core. So the issue, it's very appropriate that Prabhupada is discussing this, because in this Purusha Sukta confirmed, because it's very much centered on the subject of Purusha Sukta, the material creation, and the relationship of material creation with the source of that creation, called Sambandh. Again, it's really basic, fundamental. What's the relationship between that which we can perceive and that which is beyond our perception? The source and the creation. So there's a Vaishnava conception, and it's explicit in the Bhagavatam, it's explicit in Bhagavad Gita. So we'll come back to the Bhagavad Gita rendering. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyaktamurtina. We'll come back to that. The key to understand the Vaishnava conception is this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the simultaneous oneness. We'll spend a little time with it. The simultaneous oneness of all things with the source of generation of those things. And that's, you know, the common example is the sun and the sunshine. Where do you find the sun without sunshine? Where do you find sunshine without a sun? Is there such a thing? Shine without a sun. I got in my pocket some sunshine. I just broke off some ray, and here it is. And it's separate from the sun. No such thing. Break off a little branch of sunshine and put it in your pocketbook. It doesn't exist apart from the sun. So, similarly, the creation does not exist apart from the creator. And so there's this inextricable oneness between the creation and the source of the creation. So there's a oneness. But then there's also a difference. The creation is not the creator. And the creator is not the creation. There's oneness and there's difference. Simultaneously. And if one, very simple point, if one tries to approach this with the mind, you can't hold both conceptions at the same time, because the mind is a binary processor, or computers are just replicating what the mind does. It's a one or a zero. So what is that? That simultaneously a one and a zero. What can process that one? It's not a mind. Because the mind is a binary. So you can't hold both conceptions, the oneness conception and the difference conception, simultaneously within the mind. So it's called inconceivable. But it is simultaneously one and different. So how do you address that which is inconceivable? You receive it as it is, as descending knowledge. And it, when one receives it in that way, it enters into the seat of consciousness, namely the soul, and then to the degree that one is surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engaged in the connecting process of devotional service, proportionately one can realize. But it's not a mental function. Prabhupada describes chanting like that. It is not an artificial imposition upon the mind. Spiritual consciousness is not. Material knowledge that we're accustomed to is. There's something out there, and I go to school and I bring that something that's out there into my mind. Somebody presses a button and I can say it back. I get A's. Just have to orient a binary processor right so that I can gather this information that's out there, press the button, it comes back out again. That's an something that put Krishna, God consciousness or spiritual consciousness is something that's already within. It's not bringing it from outside and bringing it in. And then, you know, putting in another layer of software on your hard drive and then giving the program back again. It's not like that. It's already there. Knowledge of Krishna is already there. Love of Krishna is already there. Spiritual consciousness, everything's already there. Just like taking off all this yucky covering stuff and disclosing it. Therefore, it's called realized knowledge. It's something that we already know. You just have to discover it again. In this Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 section, it's very succinct. It's not elaborated in detail, but this is describing the same thing that in greater detail here in this whole chapter it has been described. In this verse it's also in a succinct nutshell, but that is the relationship between the creation and God. So the next verse, 9.5, Krishna calls this as Yogam Aishvaryam, his mystic opulence. Krishna, through his energy, is personally present everywhere. Krishna, through his impersonal feature, is present everywhere. Krishna, in his personal feature, is existing in the spiritual world. So this is it's not an adjustment to the conception of a piece of paper spread out all over. It's just that it's another perspective on how things really are. How things really are. Krishna is spread everywhere through his energies. Krishna is spread everywhere through his impersonal feature. Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan, playing on his flute and dancing with the gopis and sporting with the cowherd boys and taking the cows out into the forest. And he's doing all those things while he's simultaneously present everywhere through his expanded energies and his impersonal form. Krishna can do that. We can't do that. For us, it's inconceivable. For Krishna, it's a piece of cake. It's just who he is. It's very easy. So back to the explanation that Brahma was giving, to those of us who are very tiny, trying to understand the unlimited, it's overwhelming. It short circuits the brain. Circuit overload. The circuit shuts down. Because it's not to be understood by that ascending, it's just this by this process of hearing. So, but he gives something of an explanation. And depending upon, once again, proportionate to one's surrender, one can understand it. But not by the logic reason process. It's just, that's Krishna. And he can do these things simultaneously. He can have Avyaktamurti, and he can have his Satchitananda Vigraha. And he can have his Paramatma feature. And they're all of the same absolute nature. And there is this diversity. There's plurality in the realm of absolutes. and it's fine. Vedanta tatata vidas tatam yajnanam advayam, in this non-dual realm of the spiritual world, brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti chajnate. There's plurality in the realm of absolutes. Brahman is absolute, Paramatma is absolute, Bhagavan is absolute, and all of what Krishna does in Goloka Vrindavan and his spiritual pastimes, they're all absolute. And this material creation, so the verse is saying that same Krishna from the spiritual world, he expands. Krishna can expand and still exist. Not like the piece of paper ripped into little pieces. The original paper is gone now because it just got ripped into little pieces. Krishna can expand. This is fundamental. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. The absolute truth can expand into other complete wholes and not be reduced. That's inconceivable. Well, let's do a little exercise. Try to think of something. This is the mind now, the binary processor. Try to think of something that's so big that you take away something so big it doesn't change. It's still complete. The mind can't think of something. Take away something, it's less. That's how big Krishna is. He expands complete wholes, and he's not reduced. Krishna's potent. Krishna's inconceivable potency is an essential part of what Krishna is. And if not so, he's not God. That's like us. We can't do that. But Krishna can do that. And he does it. So he expands himself as Mahavishnu. That's what the verse is saying. This Adya Purushaha. So he, that's Krishna, expands himself as Adya Purushaha, the first Purusha, Mahavishnu, Kalpe Kalpe Suridhyatya Jaha, from millennium after millennium, he breathes. And as he breathes, universes come out of his body. Then he expands in those universes as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, within every atom. And then he inhales. And all that same energy that was unmanifest and dormant within his body again becomes withdrawn and comes to a resting position within his body for the same period as his exhalation. And that energy which comes from his body has this relationship with him or position as being non-different from him. And yet it's different from him. It's not him. It's not the source of those energies, and the energy are different. So there's this non-difference and difference. So it depends on how you, modern science has developed this perspective to a degree. Is light a particle or a wave? Some of you that have studied science, you know what this whole thing is about. Quantum mechanics. Is light a particle or a wave? And depending upon the observer, it gives evidence of it being a particle or a wave. So consciousness becomes a very important part in modern science. When you want to understand things, so much depends upon consciousness of the observer. And transcendental reality, it's also One can perceive the impersonal, one can perceive the Paramatma, one can perceive the personal feature. Prabhupada is stating it very clearly. The person who has a personal conception of the Supreme can accommodate the Paramatma and the impersonal conception as but one of the three features, each of them three features of the same Supreme. The impersonalist cannot accommodate a personal conception. They reject it as false. We just went through that earlier. Why? Because as soon as you have a personal conception, then you have an observer and observed. You have two. Well, their rule is you can't have two. It has to be only one. So Krishna just disappears. He may disappear from their perception, but Krishna doesn't go out of existence by their philosophical jugglery. You can't juggle God out of existence. He exists. The absolute truth has these simultaneous features. Carry on in the purport. The original personality of Godhead, Adhyaha, Govinda, the Asha, Adhya, expands himself as the Mahavishnu incarnation. Kalpe, kalpe, srijatyajaha. Expands himself as the Mahavishnu incarnation and rests in the causal ocean which he himself creates. The Brahma Samhita confirms this as follows. Yakaranarnava jale bhajati sma yoga nidramananda jagananda saroma kupaha adara shaktim avalamya param samurtim Govindamadi Purusham Dhamaham Bhajami. Lord Brahmaji says in his Brahma Samhita, quote, I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who lies down in the causal ocean in his plenary expansion as Mahavishnu, with all the universes generating from the pores of hair on his transcendental body, and who accepts the mystic slumber of eternity. So, this Mahavishnu is the first incarnation in the creation, which is exactly what the verse says. And from him all the universes are generated, and all the material manifestations are produced one after another. And Prabhupada makes a curious statement here. The causal ocean is created by the Lord as the Mahatattva. He's equating the causal ocean equals Mahatattva. The causal ocean is created by the Lord as Mahatattva, as a cloud in the spiritual sky, and is only a part of his different manifestations. The spiritual sky is an expansion of his personal rays, and he is in the Mahatattva cloud also. He lies down and generates the universes by his breathing, and again, by entering into each universe's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he creates Brahma, Shiva, and many other demigods for maintaining the universe, and again absorbs the whole thing into his person, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.7. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrajamyaham. Translation. Oh, son of Kunti, when the kalpa, or the duration of life of Brahma, is ended, all the created manifestations enter into my prakriti, or energy, and again, when I desire, the same creation takes place by my personal energy. Final statement and the purport. The conclusion is, okay, here's the, the conclusion is that these are all but displays of the Lord's inconceivable personal energies, of which no one can have any full information. This point we have already discussed. Even if you have full information, statement is it's not full information. But even if you had full information, how much could we understand? It's inconceivable. But to some extent, one can understand. And that extent is dependent upon devotion. Brahma therefore concludes, let us surrender unto him. So this description in Srimad Bhagavatam is not, I mean, it's intended for devotees. The information gatherers approach it in a different way. There's this information and that information, and put that information into my hard drive and walk around to be a smart person. That's not what the Bhagavatam approach is. The Bhagavatam approach is here in a way that is meant to increase our appreciation for how wonderful is Krishna. And as we appreciate how wonderful is Krishna, it inspires the willingness and enthusiasm to serve him. And through that willingness and enthusiasm to serve him, we can understand more and more and more and more. We'll go to the other side. But if we just do it as information gathering, it becomes, it's the binary processor doesn't hold all that information. It's got apparent contradictions, and this conflicts with that, and how can he simultaneously be everywhere and be in the spiritual world? It's like saying, you know, because we can't do that. It's like being inside the temple room and outside the temple room simultaneously. We can't do that. It's a contradiction. Krishna is within everything and outside of everything. What's that? He's inside everything and he's outside everything. He, by his various expansions, by his inconceivable potencies, he expands, so once again, he expands himself everywhere through the agency of his energies, like the sun is everywhere, present in the universe, by the spreading of its rays. But the sun is not literally, the sun globe is not literally everywhere. If the sun globe were to be in this room, we'd be instant ashes. Instant. But the sun is in the room through the presence of its energy. In that sense, the sun is present everywhere. Krishna is present everywhere through the agency of his energies. He's present everywhere through his expansion as Paramatma. Krishna is everywhere through his impersonal feature. I'll demonstrate this in two ways. When you fly in an airplane, you start on the ground usually, and you board the plane, and the plane is going along the runway, zoom, 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 and it starts to lift off, and now you're not on the ground, you're in the sky, and you're zooming along in the sky, and then there's the cloud cover above, and you're passing through the clouds, and then you're above the cloud cover. So now we'll go back to when you're in the clouds. When you're in the clouds, are you in the clouds or you're in the sky? You're in the clouds, but you're also in the sky. You're not on the ground. You're in the sky. Similarly, we are presently in the Mahatattva, and we're certainly very acutely aware of, you know, gross matter and the manifestations of Mahatattva. But that Mahatattva is also in the spiritual sky. We're in the spiritual sky. How evolved? We're not tuned into the spiritual sky. We're tuned into the gross matter. But we're in the spiritual sky. We're in that Brahma Jyoti. Hey, we're already there. We're in the Brahma Jyoti. You just have to realize it. So the impersonal feature is all pervasive. The Paramatma feature is all pervasive. In this world, Krishna is also present, all pervasive through his energies. He's triple all pervasive. But he has his own existence. He's not bothered with all the stuff that's going on here. He's just performing his lila in the spiritual world, playing with the cowherd boys, herding the cows, enjoying his transcendental pastime. He has his separate existence. At the same time, so all of this, it's inseparable from him, and yet Krishna is distinct. And that's the picture of spiritual reality. That one who, like ourselves, have the good fortune of hearing from Srila Prabhupada and his divine teachings, we can have, to some degree, an understanding of this inconceivable existence of Krishna. So that's on the information side. Then let's go to the realization side. That's only possible through devotional service, proportionate to the purification that we've been able to somehow receive from Krishna through the submission to his service. And then we can realize how wonderful is Krishna and become inspired to serve him. That's what Brahma is inducing within Narada. He's not just deflecting Narada's perception of Brahma as the Supreme. He's connecting that inspiration for taking shelter of the Supreme to Krishna and describing in detailed ways how this service that Brahma has, his sub-creation, is all dependent upon the Lord's potencies, and they're inconceivable, which Brahma can explain to some extent, and Narada can understand to some extent, and we can understand to some extent, although it's all quite inconceivable. It's beyond our little tiny brain. We shouldn't approach this knowledge with that measuring stick, the tiny brain, but hearing in a submissive manner. This is the instruction that we're receiving. So again, the conclusion is that these are all but displays of the Lord's inconceivable personal energies, of which no one can have any full information. This point has already been discussed. So let's see if there's some discussion this morning. We're almost finished with the chapter. I hope that tomorrow morning we'll conclude.
Sometimes we try to understand devotees of the Lord. So first we try to understand them, or first we should surrender them?
Well, trying to understand in the mood of surrender is what we should do. It's not first this, then that. It's part of surrender. Prabhupada does instruct that we should very carefully and systematically scrutinize the messages. So we have to use what Krishna has given us, you know, our faculty of discrimination. We're using it. There was some discussion yesterday about how do we use this intelligence that Krishna has given us. Try to understand, but part of that effort in trying to understand is to recognize the limitation of our limited intelligence to fully understand, but we can understand certain things. like, you know, the distinct features of the Absolute Truth. It's not yet in a realized condition, but we can at least, okay, there are these different departments or aspects of the Supreme. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. I don't have to be stuck on this one or stuck on that one. All three coexist. So that's a frame of reference or paradigm to then consider the statements that come from the scripture. We're taking help from our... So we're trying to understand, but through the medium, by the method of surrender, submissive oral reception. Yes.
How can an impersonalist be transformed into a personalist?
By association with a personalist. We're all examples. Because the default position is impersonalism. I mean, in our prana mantra to Srila Prabhupada, Nirvishesha Shunyavada.